they wouldn't relinquish one of our stores when the workers voted no to unionize with them. For over a year, they kind of tied that up in legal battles, and the workers wanted to be a part of New Seasons Labor Union, and they were making that very difficult. I see a future where New Seasons Labor Union could work with 555 and really organize a lot of our stores in Oregon, a lot of our grocery stores and retailers that are unorganized and have amazing contracts all around the state. And I hope that they go in that direction and want to be really collaborative with us, because I think that we really want to do that.
All right. Well, we're running out of time here. Talking about young workers on the move, in particular, with Ella Malloy of New Seasons Labor Union and Rajiv Ravi Sankar, formerly the Graduate Teaching Fellowship Fellows in University of Oregon. And now, Rajiv, do you have any last words that you'd like to say to our listeners about young workers on the move?
I mean, I think that there's a lot to take from, you know, this conversation that we had, and as you know, there's a lot to draw from their experiences, especially in terms of new ways of organizing, new ways of thinking about, you know, the way our movement is set up. And, you know, it really offers this possibility. There's a lot of energy that I think that we can tap into, and that, you know, with the right organizing strategies, with the right message, we can reach a lot more folks. I think that's what each of these drives shows, that even folks from a totally blank slate, not familiar with our movement, not familiar with organizing, you know, again, with the right kind of strategy, with an organizing committee, with a motivated group that can actually reach out to these folks, meet them where they are, build up membership one-on-one, and really get back to the basics of organizing, we see that that's working, and sort of blend that with maybe new ways of reaching workers through digital technologies and things. But really, it comes down to the core organizing time and again, that if you get back to the basics and give folks, you know, make them the pitch that, look, you know, look at the precarity that you're facing, look at what your day-to-day looks, you know, looks like, what your future prospects look like, you know, that organizing is the path, you know, having a union to have protections and to have better wages, there's really, that's the only path. You can't plead with your boss, you can't just, you know, sort of forge alone, you know, forge your own path on your alone. You really have to work with other people and think collectively to improve your circumstances. And I think that's what the new young worker organizing is showing us.
That wraps it up for this session of Labor Radio. We've been listening to Ella Malloy of the New Seasons Labor Union, Rajiv Ravi Sankar of the Graduate Teachers Teaching Fellows of the University of Oregon. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. We're here with Trish Jordan with Red Lodge. How you doing, Trish?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, we appreciate you too. And you've been on many times over many years. However, very overdue at this point, and there's a lot of great things to do updates. But let's start first with, just some more brief introductions about you and about all your great projects.
So my name's Trish Jordan. My mother's Creek, and I am the executive director for Red Lodge Transition Services. I'm also a co-founder of the organization. We founded in 2006 and received our 501c3 in 2007. We have a transition center for women just outside Oregon City. We opened that in October 2017, and we're now at a place where we're ready to open a men's transition center, which is going to be a lot bigger endeavor for us because there's a lot more men coming out of jail, prison, and treatment centers. And so this will provide housing and case management and life skills, referrals to other organizations that are necessary for people to be successful in their reentry.
What's the beginning of the whole story here with all this work, and how did you get into it as well?
I'm a religious service volunteer for the Oregon Department of Corrections. I've been doing that work for about 24 years now. I started when they were building the prison in Wilsonville for the women, and they had about 150 women over at Pendleton EOCI while they were building Coffee Creek. And I got a call from the chaplain over there asking if I could help with the sweat lodge ceremony for the women. And at that time, I lived in Lewiston, Idaho, which is 3 hours from Pendleton. And I'm like, gee whiz, you know, that's quite a bit for me to do, taking off a Saturday and going over there and doing that. But I thought about it, and I prayed about it, and I talked to my elders about it, and they all said that they think I should do it. Well, there was a time in my life when I could have gone down the wrong road, and I had strong Native women that helped me and loved me unconditionally. And so I feel, you know, obligated to give back to my community. I feel very blessed. I'm a registered nurse by trade. And so I started out pouring water for the sweat lodge at EOCI for those women, and then to have ladies that were getting ready to be released, and they're scared because they don't know where they're going to go, they don't know what they're going to do, they don't know, you know, who they're going to be able to rely on to help them when they get out of prison. And so when we started seeing women come back, it was just really defeating. Like, maybe we're doing more harm than good to go in there and try and help people, encourage them to change their life, that their life can be different, but then they don't have the resources when they release. And women have less resources available to them than men. It's about a 1 to 13 ratio, women to men that are in our Oregon State prisons. So we made a commitment, and we started a nonprofit organization. And as the organization grew, you know, it was apparent that we needed somebody that could sign for things like grants and things like that. And so you have to have an executive director, you have to have a board of directors. It just grew, and for several years, I worked two jobs, and then in 2016, the Collins Foundation took a chance on us and gave us the capacity building money that we needed for me to quit my day job and go to work full-time as a executive director, and so that's what I do, and I'm getting ready to retire in about a year and a half, and so I'm excited about that. Hoping to find somebody that can help fill my shoes and Just recently hired a program director for the men's program, so I'm really excited about that. We've got some great programs and we're doing some really amazing things in the community and have developed a good relationship with the Department of Corrections. We do most of the cultural programming in the 12 state prisons, getting ready to start on our annual cultural events. And so we'll do like a little tour around the state, providing those services to those prisons.
Trish, when you started the organization, then how did the name Red Lodge come up? Can you talk about what the meaning of that is?
Yeah, well, that name was given to us in ceremony. If you look at the medicine wheel, Native Americans, use that medicine wheel to help to center ourselves. And that medicine wheel is divided into four quadrants, and each quadrant represents a different race of people. It represents a direction. It represents an animal spirit. It represents a lot. And everything that we do is in a circle. And so red stands for the people, the Native American people. That's our primary focus, is to help natives, but we do help other folks too. We are not discriminatory. And then lodge is a house, and so the house that we have is painted red. And like I said, Red Lodge is just a safe place for people to come and clean and sober and provide hope and strength and renewal.
And when it comes to a lot of the different things that you do, when you talk about what's now referred to as cultural enrichment, culturally responsive programming inside the facilities, and things of that nature, and then you mentioned the medicine wheel and how that relates to it. And can you talk more about what those services actually look like, and also how have they changed, and if they happen more than they used to, and things of that nature.
Well, we're always looking for volunteers. It's hard to get volunteers. It's hard to cover the whole entire state. We do what we can, but basically, we have a lot of volunteers, and they're not all Red Lodge volunteers, but they run the sweat lodges. We have freedom of religion, right? We can do talking circles, and some prisons have beating circles. Some of them have smudges, every other week. They all get one annual event a year. And like right now, we're getting ready for the women to have their spring celebration. And what spring celebration is, we've been doing that since 2006. It's the first food ceremony. And so right now, we're gathering the food. Like last Friday, we went to Warm Springs and we got the deer. And we got four fish from the Warm Springs tribe. And then tomorrow, I'm sending somebody to meet somebody at government camp that has some of the roots. And then somebody is shipping some huckleberries from Pendleton for us tomorrow. And then I got somebody else going over to Astoria to get some more fish. So it's a lot of work to put the sacred foods together, but we have the elders from the Siemnatshoh Longhouse come down and they do the food blessing ceremony, and they talk about the significance of that those first foods and how they not only nourish us physically but spiritually, mentally, emotionally. They help to center us and they help to feed the ancestors that we carry inside.
And as far as the frequency of programming, I mean, obviously the organization is doing a lot. And then when it comes to all the other facilities and whatnot, I mean, do you feel like these kind of things are happening around the state enough? And if you know what they look like in other states comparatively or anything like that?
Oregon's ahead of a lot of different states. We've never had enough volunteers, and we continue to try and secure more volunteers. But it takes a special person to be able to go into the prison and work with this population. Prison is a subculture, and I've learned a lot over the years. Just learning how prisons work can be very stressful. You can't just walk in there. You have to, have all your paperwork and everything in order. And so There's some prisons, especially on the east side of the state, that are always getting the short end of the stick because of where they're located. There's not a lot of folks out there that, on the east side of the state that are able to go in and do this work. So, yeah, we're always doing more, it seems, than some of the other programs. But what we do is labor intensive. We don't just set up for like an hour church service. Takes us all day to do sweat lodge.
As you mentioned, you're kind of developing the program more, getting some new people involved. What are some more of your plans? And congratulations on all of your success doing this and all the great work that you've put into it, now being able to continue that and then also get some time for yourself. What are the other kind of things that you envision with this whole trajectory of great work and Red Lodge moving forward as well?
Well, we're part of the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, which was passed a couple years ago through the state legislature. And so we received some capacity money for that. And we're growing our capacity. Like I said, we're getting ready to open up the a men's transition house. And that's a long time coming. For years, we just basically have focused on the women because of our capacity and because of where Coffee Creek is located, and a lot of our volunteers are over here on the west side of the state. But the men need it too, and we know that, and we've always told them, as soon as we can, we're gonna, be working with you all too. So one of the things that I'm doing right now is teaching Wellbriety, which is a 12-step program. And I teach one class a week on the minimum and one class a week on the medium. And that's a culturally specific 12-step curriculum. And it's really taken off. The women are really excited about it. They're very interactive in the class. And we're just really hoping that, when folks do release, that they're able to maintain those relationships and maintain those teachings and maintain their sobriety, because that's kind of like at the forefront for a lot of folks in regard to being involved with the judicial system. We've got to get people to where they can provide for their families with jobs that are livable wage and life skills. A lot of folks don't even have a driver's license. So we do a lot of life skills programming also.
One thing also with this work that you do, Trish, is I think that people in the media specifically does a terrible job, or doesn't do a job, I guess, at all, of really portraying the people in which we're talking about. And if you could just say something about, I mean, the people inside, and who they are, and how young are they, how old are they, where do they come from, what have they been through. These are the things that don't really get discussed enough, and again, don't get portrayed, completely incorrectly in the media, and the folks not doing this work don't really get to understand that.
Yeah, it's a hard sell. That's all I can say is it really is, because of the stereotypes that people have of people that have committed crimes. But you have to remember that these people have had multiple crimes committed upon them, and that's not always acknowledged, and they don't always receive assistance for the crimes that they have had committed upon them. So hurt people hurt people. That's all I can say. And there's a lot of trauma in this work. We're not here to judge anybody. Like 95% of the people we work with, they have substance use disorder. So, we really work hard on making sure that people have the support that they need of a clean and sober community and the tools that they need to maintain that sobriety. And then just life skills. We're dealing with people that have come from, in some instances, reservations which are essentially third world countries. The poverty levels, astronomical. The unemployment level in Warm Springs is over 50%. So people have a lot of catching up to do, and sometimes it's not good for them to go back to the same environment that they came from. Sometimes everybody just needs a fresh start. So that's what's really important too about having these transition centers that are culturally based and people can, just feel comfortable in their own skin, because a lot of folks don't realize how important culture is, but it really does. It's so much a part of who we are, in regard to how we think, how we feel, the relationships that we have, the foods that we eat, the values that we grew up with. So to have somebody that understands you and looks like you and you feel comfortable around, that's really, really important.
When you mentioned that cultural piece, that's a great plug as well for all the artistic endeavors that the organization has done over many, many years. And so that connects with the calendar project, but the calendar project comes from all that awesome artwork, just beautiful artwork that's in a few cases has been displayed, and that you also sell all those the great kind of like gift cards and things like that as well from those pieces, as well as selling some of those pieces. So can you talk more about how that's happened over many years and how that developed doing all of the art?
Yeah, the art is really a beautiful piece of Red Lodge. We own the copyright to the art. In 2006, I believe it was, I wrote three grants to cover the cost of matting and framing. We did about 57 pieces of art that were donated to the organization, and we had an art show down in Eugene at a art gallery, the New Zone, and we did radio outreach. We did a lot of public outreach to get people to come and listen to us. We wanted to create a non-threatening environment for people to come and view the art and judge people on their art skills, not their crime. And then to have some people that we were working with talk about the barriers to reentry, how they were released, the struggles that they went through. And some of these struggles are just unbelievable. And we've made a lot of progress in the last 20, 25 years in regard to how we are releasing people from prison, but we're still got a long ways to go. So just the safety issue of releasing someone, leaving them in a gray sweatsuit with all of their personal belongings in a plastic bag, with a one-way ticket and a sack lunch at the Greyhound bus depot, it's not safe. It's just not safe. And a lot of times people don't even make it home because somebody, talks them into going and getting high or whatever, while you're waiting for the darn bus. And you don't even have a cell phone to keep in contact with your family, when you're trying to get there. So Red Lodge, that's one of the things we do is, and I kind of got off on a different tangent there, but we provide emergency transportation for people that don't have a ride home. That's really important. Anyway, the art, I wrote some grants and we made it really nice, and we had a beautiful show, and John Trudell came and spoke, and it was very successful. And so then we had another art show, and we had another art show. And then pretty soon, the Native American Prison Art Project became a traveling show. And so the art's hung in a lot of different places. It's hung in hospitals, community centers, banks, museums, colleges, universities. We're always looking for a venue for the art. And we have a small business that we provide. We have cards, calendars, prints. We have originals that we sell. Right now, we have about 560 pieces of art that have been donated over the years.
And this is also featured on your website.
Yeah, we don't have as much art as I'd like to be displayed on the website, just because like the prison art project's kind of like at the back of the to-do list, because our clients come first. So when we do have time to work on the art, we do. And the art's very meaningful. We see it as a restorative justice project where people who have been incarcerated or are currently incarcerated can donate a piece of art and know that it's going to help benefit their community.
And the website is redlodgetransition.org. And when you talked about transition, I appreciate you bringing that up because that's another piece that kind of connects to my earlier question about depictions of people and of prisoners and how that's very inaccurate. And also how folks do not understand the severity and depth and struggle it is to release back into the community. And especially for, so everybody has different resources when they get out and what that looks like. And so you're filling this major gap there. So, you already mentioned a few of those needs. And what are some of the other needs when people are getting out? What are those kind of things as well that work in tandem with Red Lodge, helping people to continue to be successful in their reentry?
Yeah. Well, I guess first off, I'd like to say that, you have interaction with people every day in your life that have felony convictions. They're changing your oil, they're cooking your meals, they're putting your tires on your car, they're out there making new streets and freeways for us, building houses. So there's a lot of folks that you would never even realize have that conviction and are paying taxes and are living good solid life. I think it's important to recognize that majority of people are doing that.
You have a lot of new projects as well.
We do. We have we have an environmental project to help people learn more about the environment and eating better foods. And we have access to foods or food banks if people need that. We have a small housing program where we can help get people into some subsidized housing if they're really struggling and they meet the criteria. We have emergency funds that we use to help pay for the first month of housing for a lot of folks that are just getting out and they just don't have, the $700 or $800 that it costs to get into a place. Lots and lots of life skills, social service things that we work with on people. Getting people's driver's licenses. Sometimes it's for the first time they've had a driver's license and getting their ID. Like, for instance, we had one young man that came out of jail. He'd been incarcerated for 10 months and he's now in drug court and he is very lucky as far as his sentencing, but he didn't have any ID. And this was just right when Trump was taking office, and I'm like, he can't be out there without any ID. His PO called me from Multnomah County and said, can you help him with this? And I said, is he an enrolled member of a tribe? And she said, yes. And so our maintenance guy took him clear to Yakima to get his tribal ID because he just has to have some ID. And we ordered his birth certificate. And so now he has his Oregon ID. And we gave him a little job because it's really hard to fit in a job when you're doing outpatient treatment and drug court. And, this is the first time he's really lived in the city. And so there's just a lot of things that we help people with, legal issues. We have some supportive services that we can usually do a referral for, especially for civil issues like fines and things, to get those reduced so that people can, move on with their lives. Some people have thousands and thousands of dollars that have accumulated over the years. And you know, what's fair? What's fair? They're never going to be able to pay that off. And essentially what it does is just keeps people slaves. It keeps them in poverty. So we do, you know, we do what we can to help. And everybody's a little different, and we treat people as individuals, and what they want is determined by them. What success is determined by them.
Well, thanks for giving those specific examples, because that just shows basically the whole kind of rabbit hole or myriad of needs for people when they're getting out and what that looks like. And Trish, again, thanks so much for all the great work that you're doing, and always looking forward to having y'all back on and getting all these great updates. And people should always check out Red Lodge Transition Services. It's redlodgetransition.org is the website. And you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guest and a Prison Pipeline Collective member, Karen James.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at KBOO.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934